From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Democrats float a last-minute charge against Brett Kavanaugh, one from his high school days. Will it derail his Supreme Court nomination? Plus, Paul Manafort cops a plea to avoid his second trial on corruption charges and agrees to cooperate with special counsel Robert Mueller. What does that mean for Donald Trump? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, and here to talk about these subjects with my colleague Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
We should say a word here first about Hurricane Florence. The big story of the week is battering the Carolinas with what could be record-setting rains. We want to wish everybody listening there the very best, and please stay safe. The dangers will not end soon. We really don't know the extent of the damage, but we do know that this will play out, could have a political impact, particularly if the damage is really severe and there is and it takes a long time for relief to arrive. But we will withhold any discussion of that until a later time, and we can see what indeed happens. But in the meantime, our best wishes to our listeners in the Carolinas. So, Kim, let's talk first today about the charge against Brett Kavanaugh. The New Yorker now adding details to what we've known about a letter that a woman who was a high school classmate of Brett Kavanaugh's at George, she was not a classmate because Kavanaugh went to an all-male high school, Georgetown Prep, but a woman who was a high school student at the time with Kavanaugh, alleging that at a party he tried to force himself on her and with another male in the room and put his hand on her mouth to keep her quiet until she managed to free herself.
Yeah, this seems to me to be a late hit. And I think what really shows that is the timing of this suddenly surprise accusation that we're only finally getting some details on. We apparently know that Dianne Feinstein has been in possession of that letter since July, so for several months now. She did nothing with it. It was never brought up in any of the meetings that senators had or she had with Brett Kavanaugh. It was never brought up in the course of days of hearings. It was never brought up at the markup hearing that they had this week in the Senate Judiciary Committee to move ahead with a committee vote next week. It just suddenly comes out once that vote was set, and it looked as though Democrats had absolutely nothing else. And suddenly they came up with what, at least until today, in that New Yorker story was an anonymous accusation and an anonymous letter that nobody had seen other than Dianne Feinstein. Republicans are calling foul on this, and I think they have a lot of reason to, not just because of the way it was handled and the timing of it, but because it does seem to be a bit of an overblown late charge. And that, look, this was, even if it happened, and we should say that Brett Kavanaugh is absolutely and unequivocally denying this ever took place.
That's right.
But even if it did, we're talking about high school 30 years ago and a person who still hasn't put herself out in the public.
Well, and he has categorically denied it. Also, the male who was in the room, supposedly, according to the accusation, with Kavanaugh, was asked by the New Yorker about it and said he had no recollection of it. But clearly, somebody leaked these details to the New Yorker with plenty of time to ask that, to track down that person and ask him that question. Second, to contact somebody, according to the story, who is close to the woman, perhaps that's her attorney or somebody representing her, even though she's claiming to be anonymous. And the question really becomes, if the allegation is so salient and so important, then why wait until the last minute? And I think because she could have had it vetted. They could have had asked him about it, as you suggested, at the committee hearing or in the private meeting or in follow-up questions after the hearing. They asked none of that. And I think it really if you want to think not just cynically but maybe realistically about what this is all about, maybe they waited until the last minute precisely so that this would be the gambit at the last minute to get a delay that they could then say, hey, wait a minute. We can't go ahead with that vote unless we hear from Kavanaugh. We need to call a new hearing. He needs to come up and answer these questions. I raise that as a possibility because I was around for Clarence Thomas, and that's exactly what happened with Anita Hill. There was right before the vote, that accusation came forward, and they had to have a hearing. They had a hearing. Now, in this case, the woman obviously is anonymous, and Anita Hill wasn't. That's going to make it more difficult. But don't be surprised if you see Democrats or liberals in the press demand a hearing.
Yeah, we are already seeing I haven't seen the politicians join on it yet, but I've seen on a couple of TV stations commentators bringing up the Anita Hill thing and saying, look, this is precisely why we need to now have a hearing. And of course, they have resurrected the claim that Joe Biden, who was in the Senate at the time, supposedly had the names of other women who were making similar accusations against Clarence Thomas, but he never bothered to call them. And this was justice denied. They might still have kept Clarence Thomas from the court if only there had been a full vetting. And I'm now seeing people already saying, see, and this is why we've got to fully track this down to make sure we don't make an epic mistake by putting Kavanaugh on the court. It does, again, it's very stinky, Paul, because to your other point as well, if this is so serious, not just a question of bringing it up with him before now, but if Dianne Feinstein felt this was serious enough to forward it to federal law enforcement, and particularly the FBI, that should have been done immediately upon receiving the letter, if you thought that it was there. By the way, on the FBI, we should note, and I think that aspect of it somewhat blew up in Democrats' faces, in that they, you know, sounded, oh, this is very serious enough to send to the FBI. The FBI's response was, well, we're going to put it in the file we have on him here. But by the way, this is not something we would have ever had jurisdiction over. It would have been local law enforcement. And that is if the statute of limitations hadn't long ago passed. So, you know, because we are talking about something that happened more than 30 years ago.
Well, and in
if it happened.
Yeah, if it happened. And in high school, they're both minors. Now, you don't want to dismiss behavior like that. Nobody, if you were my son, I wouldn't want anybody to behave like that. And I'd, you know, give them hell for it. But the thing that is just the nature of this, you owe it to the nominee to raise it right away. You owe it to the American public to raise it right away. And the question in the New Yorker implies in its reporting that Democrats on the committee, the Judiciary Committee, other than Dianne Feinstein, and she's the ranking member on Judiciary, were puzzled and maybe upset with Feinstein for not going public with that or not informing them and others earlier about the letter. And that at the end, that here at the end, therefore, the implication is that she may have felt that she had no choice but to go public with it, even if perhaps she had had some doubts about its provenance or importance or earlier. I don't know the truth. What is the truth? I know that somebody is trying to do this last minute hit.
Yeah. And look, I think it's notable. I was talking about some media commentators you've seen saying these things, but we have not so far, that could change, but we have not heard even those who have been most actively opposed to Judge Kavanaugh publicly talking about this in the Senate. So Kamala Harris or Cory Booker, they have not latched on to this. And that would suggest that, you know, maybe Dianne Feinstein was right in having some – I mean, I think it's clear she's right in not bringing this up, because maybe there were some doubts about the story or the person, or she just simply recognized that this is really a stretch. It's not something that is that most people would view as disqualifying. In fact, might view as a bit silly to be having a public discussion about. I think some Democrats are worried about that as well. And because here's also what goes against you get an accusation like this, and you have to put it in the context of what else you know about this person. And it's just so at odds with everything. This is a man who's been vetted for 25 years of public service. No one has ever raised any allegation even close of something like this about him before. And we also have, that came out today, dozens of women who knew him, went to school or knew him around this time in that age, coming out and vouching and saying, this is not the Brett Kavanaugh that we know. He's never been anything but a gentleman. So it seems utterly at odds, which is also what just makes it more difficult to even start to believe.
All right. We're talking about Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court nomination and Paul Manafort's guilty plea. And you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
Join The Wall Street Journal at the Future of Everything Festival on May 21st to 23rd in New York City, where diverse global newsmakers share unique perspectives on navigating a changing world. Immerse yourself in live performances, explore pioneering technologies, and indulge in the city's inventive culinary scene. As a podcast listener, enjoy 20% off current ticket rates with code PODCAST. Visit wsj.com/FOEF podcast to secure your spot.
Drive time, gym time, anytime. Podcasts from the Wall Street Journal. Check out all our shows at wsj.com/podcasts. That's wsj.com/podcasts. From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel. And to finish up on the Kavanaugh nomination shenanigans, you have the, I think, the motivation of the Democrats here, not just defeating. If they can't defeat Kavanaugh, they want to delay the vote as long as possible, delay it after the election, I think, Kim, so that the Democrats in running in tough reelection races or incumbents can avoid having to take a vote that might anger some of one group or another, either middle independents who support Kavanaugh or Democrats who want to defeat him. So they'd love to put that vote past the election if possible, and maybe if they win the Senate, then they can insist that he shouldn't be confirmed at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what they want to do at the very least, is remove that perilous vote from their most vulnerable Senate members. I think at the very most, they'd be thrilled if they could, you know, twin this with the Me Too movement, aim it very much at Republican senators such as Susan Collins or Lisa Murkowski, make them nervous, claim that they aren't taking seriously enough claims of abuse against women, and try to get them to jump ship on this vote. Now, we don't have any evidence that that's the case. Susan Collins actually had a call with the judge today, one that I believe was prearranged. It was always already designed to be happening, but she got off and said, you know, I talked to the judge today, and I'm not making any further statements until I make my decision, which has been her view all along. And, you know, people I talk to feel confident that she will remain on board. She's a savvy politician. She undoubtedly sees what's going on here. But they're going to try to ramp up that pressure, and I'm sure we'll see it in the media too, to try to turn this into an epic scandal that loses him votes.
All right, Kim, we will follow this next week. Let's turn to Paul Manafort, President Trump's former campaign manager, who's already been convicted of on corruption charges and faces some 8 to 10 years in prison on those charges. He copped a plea deal this week with on Friday with Robert Mueller and his prosecutors to forego his second trial, which was on more corruption charges and violating federal lobbying laws. He has now pleaded guilty to felonies for conspiracy against the United States and conspiracy to obstruct justice. I also will turn over significant assets, including four homes. And of course, he'll await sentencing. Most important, he has agreed as part of the settlement to cooperate with the prosecutors. And presumably that means tell them whatever he knows, if he knows anything at all, about Donald Trump and Russia.
Well, you can certainly see why Paul Manafort took a deal like this. He's been squeezed by Mueller for, well, more than a year now, and really very aggressively, with dozens of charges filed against him that would equal literally hundreds of years life imprisonment. At the very least, his home was raided. In a statement today, he said that he wanted to get this done with so that he could make sure his family remained safe and solvent in the future, because obviously the legal bills are huge. And he does get some benefits here in that he does forego that trial. They dropped five other charges against him. He doesn't have the outstanding charges from the first trial still hanging over his head, because there was a mistrial on those, which allowed the special counsel, if they wanted, prosecutors, if they wanted, to retry him on those. And then he gets a cap of 10 years on any sentence that he serves. So you can see why he did it. What I don't really get, though, is you already have this breathless media speculation, and we've seen it before every time somebody agrees to cooperate with a special counsel probe. Now, finally, we have the Rosetta Stone of the Trump-Russia collusion narrative. But Paul Manafort has claimed all along consistently that he does not have any evidence to give on this, because there was no collusion. And notable today, Politico is reporting that a member of someone close to his defense team has said that this cooperation doesn't involve anything to do with the Trump campaign, because there was no Russia collusion.
Well, and that's a stunning set of events, if true, because I mean, not stunning in the sense that it's impossible to believe, because we've had 2 years of this now, and we still have no facts to come out of really any evidence beyond just token meetings of between Russians and some Trump campaign officials of any serious collusion at all. So, and yet there has been all of this reporting all along that suggested this was the big fish, this was the big catch, this was the person who was going to doom Donald Trump. And if Manafort has no real important information about Trump, then you have to ask yourself, well, where does this go? Where does the Russian probe go? And we had the plea deal earlier, I think it was last week or the week before, of Mr. Papadopoulos, the sort of bit player who in the campaign, who he was sent to prison for 14 days for lying to the FBI. But when he was interviewed on CNN about what he had information he had about Donald Trump in the campaign, there was basically nothing.
Nothing at all. And remember, think back, Paul, when he first agreed to do this plea deal and work with the special counsel's office, we were told that, you know, this was the guy who was going to finger the Trump campaign for some role in all of those hacked Democratic emails in 2016. Same kind of breathless speculation. He turns out he knew nothing. Zero evidence. And in the end, the best Mueller could get him on in terms of this plea deal was a charge that he had lied to the FBI about some of the dates. And the judge, as you mentioned, was so unimpressed by all of this that he gave him all of 14 days.
Prosecutors had asked for what, a year?
They had asked for a sentence ranging from 0 to 6 months.
Okay.
Up to 6 months. Anyway, 14 days. Papadopoulos' team had actually argued that he should just have probation, and you could maybe argue that probably would have been even a fairer sentence given what's happened here. And I think that's one of the problems is, look, you know, Rick Gates and Paul Manafort, Beltway bandits, you know, no one can justify any crimes that they committed, if indeed they committed them, as a jury has found, we should note, in several counts. But why was everyone here in the dock? Why is George Papadopoulos spending 14 days in jail? Why is we spent 2 years, raiding people's homes? So far, the only thing that Bob Mueller has managed to prove when it comes to the Trump team is that there are some Beltway bandits who have long operated in Washington, and that 30-year-old campaign aides get really nervous when they talk to the FBI. And at some point, this is going to need to end. Now, again, neither you or I know. Maybe Paul Manafort knows something amazing. But should also point out the House and Senate Intelligence Committees thoroughly investigated him as part of their own investigations into this. They couldn't find anything. They could find no evidence of collusion. Everyone who's looked at this has never been able to find anything. And yet the Mueller probe goes on.
Yeah, Kim, I think I want to stipulate here that my approach to this, as I think it has been yours to all along, has been, all right, fine, investigate the charges of collusion. Certainly,
absolutely,
we don't want to sweep anything under the carpet. Let's get it out. We know that the FBI started this counterintelligence investigation that included Trump officials with back in maybe as early as the spring of 2016, certainly by the summer of 2016. And now it's September of 2018. And you have to ask your and so, all right, fine, investigate. But let's wait and reserve judgment on any of this until we actually see what the facts are. And it's show me the money. Show me the facts. Show me the connections. What do they mean? And right now you've had really a lot of innuendo, a lot of supposition, and not a lot of actual facts. Now, will Manafort have the keys to the kingdom for Robert Mueller? Maybe. I don't know. I don't profess to know. But the question is, but if he doesn't, then yes, time to end this thing. And allow a duly elected president to get on with it and do his job.
Well, you make a good point, which is that if you're looking at all the different players that might have played a role or had something to actually tell Bob Mueller, one of them was Papadopoulos, and obviously Manafort was the other one that was always in his sights. I suppose he could go down the path of asking Donald Trump Jr. more about that infamous meeting that was held at Trump Tower between himself and this Russian woman who was tied to the Kremlin, the one who reached out to him and requested the meeting, in which the discussion was largely about U.S. sanctions on Russia's. Maybe there's some other paths you can go down. But in my mind, if you've gone through Papadopoulos and now you've got Manafort and they still don't turn up, you're beginning to run out of places that you are going to find some explosive smoking gun. And yes, at some point, this will need to end.
And presumably here, as we approach the election, under Justice Department rules, Mueller would have to go silent and not bring charges this close to an election. That would be the protocol. Kim, would you agree with that?
Yeah, it would be. And let's hope that he uses this moment. He's got this plea deal, because one thing this does take away, and I think it's arguably good for the country, is that the Manafort plea deal removes the headlines that would have come from the second trial, which was due to begin next week. And it wouldn't have dominated a lot of this midterm cycle because it would have gone on for a while. That is at least now not going to happen. And so you're not going to have this explosive day-to-day breathless press coverage of the Manafort trial and Trump collusion theories. But he should use this opportunity. It would be good judgment to now just go quiet until at least November, because it is protocol and because he risks undermining the credibility of this probe if he looks as though he's using it in any way to interfere in an election.
All right, Kim Strassel, last word. Thank you. And thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with more editions of Potomac Watch.